Welcome to Ray and Kay. Today it's Friday.
Wow. Can you believe it? He's 4 years old and he's introducing the show, Young William, a.k.a. Willie Beeman. That's awesome. That's fantastic. So if you didn't know, you're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
Oh, man, and I'm Tay. The proud father. Eric Taylor. Oh, man. So listen, if you want to join us, your Black Friday, your turkey, Hanukkah gifts, everything's happening and everything should be settling. So settle on in and join us. 718-664-9098. And like always, hit up the website, rayandtaytoday.com. Very interactive. And shoot us some emails. You know, Ray and I, we like to read them on the show. Sometimes we're busy, we can't get to them, and sometimes we throw you on. So, you know, you don't know who is going to get read live on the air. So, and we answer back to people. So that's a lot of fun. And and that's rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. And like always, tweet at us because we definitely answer you there. And on Facebook at Ray and Tay Today. Ray, let them know how this late night, prime time, Ray and Tay Today Friday show will begin.
Prime time. We've got a lot of football to talk about, and we'll get to that.
Sure.
So hold your horses. We'll talk about the football games we just had, the three Thanksgiving games, and preview NFL Week 13. But before we do that, we'll start the show with a little college basketball, a little pro basketball, and then we'll get into some college football. So for all you football heads out there, your football's coming, but we'll start the show with a little basketball as a teaser, and then we'll get into the full swing of Turkey Day football.
Yo, are we crossing over on them and clapping boards or what?
And spiking the ball for a little touchdown.
Oh, great. So, listen, there's not much breaking news, right? I mean, we talked about it, but I guess the one thing that it hasn't settled yet, and it's almost like the never-ending story, but Richie Incognito has accepted a sort of a plea bargain and a deal to be suspended with pay. So I don't even know what that means in a sense. I mean, you know what it means in terms of the verbiage, but is there some, him admitting that he did some wrong there? I mean, what's going to come out,
I think this is the only outcome that could work for everybody. He can't come back to the Dolphins. I don't think that PR-wise they could have him back, and he'll have to be on another team next year. But the CBA says
more
that you
so
can
than
only
Martin, you think?
Yeah, I don't think Richie Incognito, just because of the fans, just because of the perception, just because of Stephen Ross and the whole idea that, the workforce, conditions in the workforce. So he won't be a Dolphin next year. I can pretty much assure you that. So the only problem with that is that you say, okay, well, then cut him. But the problem is the CBA doesn't allow you to cut somebody for disciplinary reasons. You can only suspend them for 4 games. So because this happened so early in the season, this is really the only way out for both sides. So he won't be a Dolphin next year, but they'll have to pay him until the end of the season. And neither Jonathan Martin nor Richie Incognito will be part of that offensive line for the Dolphins this year or next year. So it's unfortunate, but, in some ways it's
also bizarre. Where do they go? What locker rooms opens, their arms, players and or organization and coaches, to both of these guys? That's the question.
Well, it's a good question. But you know what? Offensive line is in such demand that I think both of them will get jobs. Eventually, Richie Incognito will be starting somewhere, I think, on one of the 31 other teams next year. Jonathan Martin will have to work his way, but he's a young, talented left tackle. Those don't come around that often. So he'll be on a team, too.
Yeah, he's
too.
Got potential.
They'll both be on
teams. And he struggled at left tackle and played a little bit better at right tackle, but he's got a job somewhere. Incognito, he sort of, might have been a prior or current knucklehead, but a solid guard in the league.
Yeah,
so.
Deep down, a lot of coaches will put up with, not even deep down, they'll put up with a lot of stuff off the field and even in the locker room. If you have the motor and have the play that Richie Incognito has, they love his nastiness, his tenacity on the field. They'll put up with a lot and look the other way. So he'll be on somebody's team next year. He's, what, is in his ninth year? So he's not that old as far as offensive linemen go.
Well, let's get right to it. Perfect segue from what you said. Speaking of motor, you got the game's running a little late because of triple overtime where Drexel beat Alabama in the semis of the preseason NIT at Madison Square Garden. I wish I was there, man. I know. Shout out to our boy Edgar Burgos. I know he's there holding it down. But Duke and super freshman Jabari Parker lead Arizona and super freshman Aaron Gordon 38-35. So that's number 6 versus number 4 Arizona in the country. Ray, what are you thinking about these young studs? And, you know, look, I mean, these guys are getting to championships of tournaments. Shout out to Syracuse for winning the Maui. We spoke about that off air. It's exciting. I mean, college basketball to me, it's, you know, there's some excitement in the air. I think it's going to be one of those seasons that we'll remember for a long time.
Yeah, and I don't think we've ever seen a freshman class that is this dominant and this has this
skilled.
Much potential, this much skill, this much talent that's this developed at age 18. I mean, we may have seen talented players in college before, but this influx of freshmen, and then you add a couple of these sophomores like Smart over at Oklahoma State, this is a great, great crop of young, talented thoroughbreds playing college. I'd love to see them play just selfishly maybe 2 years in college and just see them develop and to have some allegiance to their college or to their university. But all of these guys will be in the pros next year, which makes for a fantastic NBA draft. This 2013-2014 draft or 2014 NBA draft is going to be, you know, one of the best ever.
Especially
so
with those
sophomores. Enjoy them while you can.
Right, and especially with the sophomore that you mentioned, Marcus Smart, you know, they beat Butler in a close game, but, you know, 17, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, whatever. The guy, he's so ready. When you see his game, you know, he easily could have been a top 4 pick.
He would have been a top 5 this year.
Yeah, so, I mean, next year. But what I like about him, he's got some explosiveness like a young Gary Payton or Jason Kidd or, you know what I mean? Like, He's got a good, solid body. The kid, he's going to be nasty. And then we got the Michigan kids. Look, there's a lot of it's not going to just be the 3 or 4 great freshmen that we all know. I think this draft, the first, 6, 7, or 8 guys can affect a franchise. Not saying they're all LeBron or Melo, but they're definitely going to be all stars, I believe, at least the top 8 guys in this draft.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. This is great. Now, the only problem is on the NBA side, you're going to have more than one franchise tanking this year to try and get a top 5 player in the draft. And even though they might deny it, you can see by the roster moves and you can see by what's going on the court that some of these teams are preparing
for. Why are you
for.
Going there?
So, well, okay, the NBA did institute a lottery system, so at least you don't directly benefit from losing your games. Yeah.
Protects it a little bit. But before we segue there, and that was the perfect segue, you know, Ray knows how to drop them down. But before we cross them over to the pro laces, let me ask you this question. Are you ready for Tuesday, Wednesday night? We'll talk about it on Monday, but I'm just already hyped up. The ACC Big Ten, classic is coming up. And so North Carolina, our team, you know, if you go to RayandTayToday.com, you'll find out who Ray and Tay, we pledge – you know, our allegiance and stripes to what uniforms we rock in every league, every sport, from NASCAR to golf to everything, tennis, everything. But we are Tar Heel fans, and we're going to keep it real with you. I'm a Terrapin, yo Terps. You'll hear me say it on the show because I went there, but Tal and I were raised Tar Heel fans, and they play Michigan State on, I believe it's Wednesday. Maryland plays Ohio
Again.
State.
Again.
It's going to be fun.
Seem like
I know.
Those two teams play all the time.
Kid, I'm excited, but this is why I was asking you this, because Syracuse is undefeated. They've won every time they've gone to the Maui, and they beat Baylor. And by the way, Baylor looks good. I like the Baylor team, but that Isaiah Austin.
What a program
Austin
they have developed down there in Waco, right? Football
they
and
really
basketball
have.
Now.
They really, Ray. It's rocking in Waco. We might have to
Road
make a
trip
to Waco. What?
Ray and
what,
Kay
yo.
From Waco.
Yo, what's going on in Waco? What they cooking, yo? That's more than a barbecue. But I'll just say this. It's Syracuse in the ACC. How does that sound to you? I mean, are you
– It doesn't
–
I tweeted about that. It doesn't even look right. They have ACC on their logo, ACC in the Carrier Dome. They're a founding member of the Big East. They shouldn't be in the ACC, but don't get me started. But this ACC
Big Ten – It's going to be a
game
good one
on Tuesday and Wednesday. That's going to be great. I mean, there are some fantastic matchups. And you know what? It used to be ACC Big East, and then about 7 or 8 years ago, it became ACC Big Ten. And those are the two best conferences, I mean, consistently, right? The Big East now, because of what's going to happen now and how
Indiana.
They split up. This is great college. We'll talk about it on Monday. We'll preview some of the top games. I think there's, what, eight or nine games. It's going to be great.
So let me ask you this. The current number 4 seed in the Eastern Conference with just a horrible record, the Heat are in Toronto tonight, and they're up 57-43. And I just sort of say this jokingly, right, because Toronto's in first place in the Atlantic Division, which is just so horrible. And, you know, we've been talking about it early this season, what's wrong with the local teams, the Knicks and the Nets. Brooklyn's at Houston tonight. The Knicks are in Denver. But, you know, when you really look at it, you wonder sometimes, can anyone beat the Heat? And you're starting to wonder, is it just Heat Pacers? Because it seems like with no Derrick Rose and Brooklyn and the Knicks, you don't know about their health and just their skill, actually. You know, it's almost looking like it's only the Western Conference we have to keep our eyes on, because the East is really a two-team race. Yeah, you'll see some nice stories during the season with the Hawks and Pistons and, you know, maybe the Wizards get on a roll because your boy John Wall, you know, 3 games in a row, 30 points. But, Ray, is it just Pacers and Heat, that, if we're being honest, for the Eastern Conference?
Yes. I hate to say it, and I hate to be that blunt, but, yes, the minute Derrick Rose went down, it became a two-team race because Brooklyn and New York, while they may get it together, they're not going to be from the Brooklyn's played 15 games already. The Knicks have played 14 games. And in those games, there's nothing in those games to lead you to believe that these two teams can compete and win even a series, let alone 3 series in the Eastern Conference playoffs, let alone get – well, first let's start with getting to the playoffs. So they'll probably
not
get it together and get a 6, 7, 8 seed, something like that. So if you look at this Eastern Conference, you look at Indiana, Miami as being the top 2 seeds, and then there's a huge, huge drop-off until you get to Atlanta, Toronto, Chicago, Washington, Charlotte, Detroit. Those are the teams that are currently in the playoffs. And then let's say Brooklyn and New York get their acts together. Maybe Cleveland gets their act together. But it's a two-team race. This is just – I mean, it's the exact opposite of the West, where you figure in the West – 6 or 7 teams have a legitimate chance to go to the Western Conference Finals. If it's not Indiana, Miami, I mean, barring a major injury, I'd be shocked. Those are clearly the best.
Let me ask you this. How far does Chicago drop? Before we go talk about the West, and this Sunday we have a great game, Pacers at Clippers, which should be a lot of fun. Could be a finals preview. I was, you know, talking to Ray about that off air. No one would be upset to see the Pacers-Clippers go 7 games. But how far do the Bulls drop without making any moves? What do you think they maintain?
So the Bulls are the 3rd best defensive team in the league, and I think defense always travels. And so Tom Thibodeau has them playing D. So behind Indiana and San Antonio, they've given up the 3rd fewest points in the NBA. And I think that bodes well for them being – a top 4 seed in the East. And they probably could win a first-round series depending on their matchup and maybe even get to a second-round series, maybe even get to a matchup with Indiana or Miami depending on where the seeding plays out. But I still like Chicago. And the reason I like them is because they played without Rose last year. So they had the initial shock of losing Rose and figuring out how to play without him. So he goes down once again, and and it took them about a week to realize.
But pause your horses or not, though, because two major pieces are missing from that roster, and our boy Little Nate Robinson in Denver and Marco Bellinelli, who will hit you up with an Italian pizza pie for three, now he's in San Antonio.
You're
and
100%
so
right.
Yeah,
but
they were both great scorers. Give them
the rest
props.
Of the conference has gone down, though. So while they've lost those two, and they picked up Mike Dunleavy, so it's a net, you know, net one of them out, right? And Dunleavy isn't playing as great as they had
and
expected.
Now you need Heinrich and Marcus Teague to play like men.
Right.
You know, I mean,
but
Heinrich has already proven he does.
The conference has come back to them, right? So in
That's
their
fair.
Matchup right now, they'd play, you know, if they're four right now, they'd play Toronto as a 4-5. Or maybe they
move
up.
Well, no, they're
up
the three right now. 3-6, they would play the Wizards.
The Wizards, okay.
Right
well,
yeah,
no, by record,
so.
they're seventh. So Toronto's four because they're in the Atlantic, right? They'd be the four seed because they would win the Atlantic. But they're 6-8. They're a game behind. But you're right. So bottom line is they play Atlanta, Toronto, Washington, Charlotte, one of those teams, right? I favor the Bulls in any of those matchups.
Nah, you're right. Let's swing out west. I mean, one thing that's fascinating, the Pacers still just have one loss. The Blazers at number two in the West, right? They go to 13-3 because they lost to the Phoenix Suns, who are soaring in the Western Conference. Clippers 11-5. Spurs are still shining. But I want to ask you about the Suns. Spurs are still, you know, number one at 13-2. But when you look at Phoenix, right, and we know the Lakers, you know, Kobe's looming, probably realistically Christmas, playing decent ball at 8-8, but at 8-7, and still not in the playoffs, right behind, you know, Golden State, who's 9-7, how impressed are you with Jeff Hornacek, the ex-two guard that we know from, you know, Philly and the Utah Jazz? How impressed are you with the coaching job, the Morris twins, Green, Bledsoe, Dragic, dropping 39 the other night? Talk to me about the Phoenix Suns. They're kind of banging it. Things are hot out here in the desert, right?
Well, it's unfortunate that Phoenix is in the West, because if Phoenix were in the East, they'd be a playoff team, and they would be giving people a run for the money. But this team is pretty impressive. I tell you what, I had lower expectations than what Phoenix is showing. They're 8-7 right now, and I thought that your two best players – are, you know, play the same position in Eric Bledsoe and Goran Dragic. So these guys, you know, they're building a nice young nucleus. I like what they're doing. I think they're getting too much scoring from those two. I mean, I think, Bledsoe's averaging 20 a game and Dragic is averaging 17.5 or so. So they need, and then behind them is Gerald Green, who suddenly has a resurgence in his career. So they need a little bit more in the front court. Now, the Morris twins are doing their thing.
Well, Marquise is doing a little bit more than his brother, Marcus, in the front court. And P.J. Tucker is doing really well at the three and a defensive stopper as of late at the small forward. So,
yes, and who knew that Miles Plumlee was going to be an NBA player, right? I mean, they thought about his brother Mason would be the better NBA prospect, but it turns out Miles is doing his thing, so good for him. And Channing Frye, right, he had that season where he missed the season for his medical issues. So you know what? And I still don't love the Phoenix roster, because in this NBA you need a star. And you might need two stars, right? So it's
maybe
the
Archie Goodwin,
Miami Heat.
Maybe he
model.
Develops a little. Yeah. No, you're right. And look, but like one thing you said, they'll still be in the lottery. Who knows? Who knows what they draft, right? They'll still be in the lottery.
And I just think that it's a luxury to have your two best players play the same position. So ultimately, I think they're going to have to trade Goran Dragic and get something good for him, because I got to believe that somebody needs a point guard that averages 17.5 and 7, right? He's a heck of a player.
He really is, and you wonder, you know, where he would go. I don't know. Jeremy Lin's out for 2 weeks, you know, just on the injury news front that I noticed. But I don't know what roster that's sort of like potentially already a playoff roster, you know, like who might be moved around, you know. It's going to be interesting to see what the Nets and the Knicks do come the trade deadline, I'll tell you that much. But, you know, you said it, man. Today's a football show, so let's pull in the reins, because, you know, Ray and Tay, we love basketball. We can go at you all night with some hoops now. We can hoop it up. But let's get to the gridiron, because I think what's going to happen this weekend. Actually, you know what? I'm gonna throw you a little transition, you know, because I think you're not really ready for football. I think I hear you sneaking some turkey.
Get us ready.
I hear you sneaking some turkey. And so Ray and Tay will be right back. College football.
All right, we're back to talk some NCAA football. And guess what? This is the last game of the season.
This is it.
Before the conference championships. So this is rivalry week, right? You've got Oregon playing Oregon State. You've got Ohio State playing Michigan. You've got the battle in South Carolina of two top 10 teams, Clemson playing South Carolina. You've got the big daddy of them all this year in Alabama.
The Iron Bowl.
Iron Bowl, number one Alabama at number four Auburn. You've got a game that used to be a big deal, Florida State, Florida, although Florida's 4-7 this year. So Arizona State, UCLA, USC. I mean, pick your rivalry. Duke, North Carolina.
Hey, don't forget Stanford, Notre Dame. You know, we got a lot of Notre Dame fans listening.
No, of course. We've got rivalries up and down the schedule today. So let's talk about the top 25 games in college.
Yeah.
Right, let's limit it. Let's be focused.
No, we got to be focused, because you could get carried away. You know, hey, you know, I like to give my traditional weekly shout-out to NIU playing on a Tuesday night, Ray. You talk about no rest. 33-14, Jordan Lynch does his thing again. This guy is a monster. If he doesn't get invited, this quarterback, I mean, his rushing stats are ridiculous.
He broke his own record. He broke his own NCAA record. Ran for 321 yards.
That's absurd. And I just, if he doesn't, it's almost it'll be a mire. If they don't invite him to New York, then I just think people are not going to respect the Heisman, because everyone is seeing what this kid is doing. You know, we're not the only ones shining light on him. You can't help but ignore him. ESPN's starting to put a lot of, you know, press on the kid, and he deserves it, because, yeah, you question some of the talent, you know, in terms of who they're playing against, but they're number 14 in the country, and he's playing ball. So we salute him, and hope we see him at the athletic club, you know. So let's start with it like this. We'll build up to Auburn, Alabama. If I ask you one game that besides that, I mean, obviously for us, Ohio State, Michigan, but it's not ranked. You know, we're both Michigan fans. It's probably not going to happen this year for them. Ohio State will kill them. But let's look at the bottom. Number 22 at number 23, UCLA travels to USC. These are two huge historic football franchises, Pac-12. The alumni is just, you know, the list runs on. Are you going with Hundley, or do you think USC is having a resurgence? Are they playing for this new coach? Are they hot right now? Because to me, they're sort of a team with some momentum. But at the end of the day, I'm going with Hundley. I just think this kid played his heart out against Arizona State, and they just couldn't pull it out. But I really believe he has one of those 300-400-yard passing days. USC's pass rush is not as ferocious as Arizona State's. And I think UCLA, the Bruins, handle the Trojans 28-27 in a dogfight. Pac-12,
so
baby.
I think this is a big game for both programs. Right, Jim Morris putting together a heck of a resurgence at UCLA, and Ed Orgeron basically salvaged this season once they fired Lane Kiffin at LAX. And by the way, if you're going to fire somebody, don't fire him at the airport. Let the man go home, you know,
how
on the team bus and get
and
the
Hayden
phone call the next
like
morning.
This. And it's so funny, because Hayden seems like this, like, polite, almost hokey gentleman. But he's kind of like, you know, he's an ex-NFL quarterback, for those who don't know, Pat Hayden with the Rams. He's kind of ferocious there. That was a nice.
So I like UCLA also in this game. I think Brett Hundley, and I think that this kid Miles Jack, and I just like UCLA and Evans, the big wide receiver, Shaquille Evans. Not to be confused with the other Evans we'll talk about
they
later.
Call him Shaq.
Shaq Evans.
Call him Shaq.
So I like UCLA. I think UCLA can score. I'm not sure that USC can put up the points that UCLA can put up in a shootout. I love Marquise Lee. I think that USC is playing for the coach. They want to keep him. He's an offensive-minded guy. He's a recruiter, Ed Orgeron. But ultimately, I think UCLA wins in a shootout. The Battle of L.A., I think they'll win something like 31-24.
Okay. Now, we also have one other extra-ranked game that we didn't really – well, I guess we did talk about it or consider it, but it's Notre Dame. Number 25 goes to number 8, Stanford. Now, these are, you know, academia all over the place with these two universities, Notre Dame and Stanford. Coach David Shaw, friend to the show, has been on. You know, we had a great time talking to him. I think Hogan, to me, I think he ends the season with a bang. It's been a rough season for Stanford. You know, I think Reese, he's not it, you know, but he's had, 2,700 passing yards. He's played as good as you could expect. But I think at the end of the day, Notre Dame, they just, losing their quarterback early, it just took all the energy out of them. And I think Stanford, Gaffney, Hogan, and Ty Montgomery. I mean, as a receiver and punt returner, kick returner, this kid is electric. I mean, almost, 800 and change receiving yards, 9 touchdowns. But when you see the way Gaffney is running the ball, you got to believe Stanford sort of pounds Notre Dame. I'll take Stanford 30-21.
So we have a lot of Notre Dame fans listening to the show. We also have a lot of Stanford fans. They retweeted us after Coach David Shaw was on the show. So we appreciate that. We appreciate the love. But we have to call it like we see it. And I basically see Stanford taking out their frustrations on Notre Dame. I look at them thinking to themselves, you know what? This is a season we were top 5. We had hopes at playing in the BCS championship game, potentially winning this game. So I think that Notre Dame is a soft 8-3. I think they'll be 8-4. I think Stanford wins this game. And I think that the Stanford defense doesn't get enough credit, not only for being schematically very good, but being pretty athletic. I mean, you really don't think about the Pac-12 for defense at all. And yet the Stanford defense, they're going to have a handful of players playing on Sundays in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I think their defense shuts down Notre Dame's offense. I think they win big. And this kid, Tyler Gaffney, is a workhorse. Already got 251 carries. And they've only played – and this is a college kid. They've only played 11 games. I mean, this guy in college is going to run over 300 times.
Yeah, like 37 in one game. He's a
I like Stanford. I like them to put up big points. I think they'll win something like 35-20.
All right. Clemson, number 6, at number 10, South Carolina. Your boy Clowney, this is his last chance. Now, he hasn't been dominating this season. Let's be honest. Let's be fair. Maybe he wasn't in the best of shape in the beginning, and, maybe it's double and triple teamed a lot. But either way, South Carolina has still put up a pretty good season. You thought early on that it could be a special season for them, but, 2 losses, you can't complain at 9-2. And then Clemson, Taj Boyd and what Clemson's doing, people forget. They're still only number 6 in the country. That Florida State loss was a rough one. They took it on the chin. But I actually think Taj Boyd goes out with a bang. And I think they, nullify Clowney in the pass rush. I don't expect too much out of Shaw. I think Clemson's defense actually flexes their muscles. They stop the running back Davis. And I think you'll see something from, Taj Boyd in terms of getting the first downs, moving the chains, but the explosive plays, obviously, to Sammy Watkins. And I think Watkins is just going to be a beast in this game. 2 touchdowns, over 100 yards. McDowell will do a little bit out of the backfield as well. I have Clemson 31-27 over South Carolina. Very exciting game.
So I think that Clemson, don't tell anybody, they're 10-1. They only had one bad game, and that one bad game was a really bad game. They got blown out by Florida State and famous Jameis Winston. So This team has been on the upswing for the last 3-4 weeks, and I love the combination of Taj Boyd and Sammy Watkins. Hope to see both of them on Sundays in the NFL. You'll definitely see Sammy Watkins in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
Taj Boyd can catch on somewhere. Taj Boyd, we'll talk about him later on, you know, as we start talking about Heisman and if he needs to get a couple of votes thrown his way.
Do you think maybe if he has a big game, he could get back in the conversation? This could be the game against Clemson in South Carolina.
He might, because, look, he gets to play the only other person that gets this kind of chance and this kind of form, and we'll talk about it in a couple of minutes, but A.J. McCarron gets to play a number 4 team, right, on the road.
Right.
And Jordan Hare, he gets to go to Auburn. So he gets a primetime spotlight. And Taj Boyd gets to play a top 10 team, right? He gets to play the old ball coach, and he gets to play the number 10 team in the country in South Carolina. So I like
his opportunities. Yeah.
His opportunity, right. His opportunity to play a team that can get him some, you know, back in the Heisman talk. So like you, I hate to agree with you, Tay, but I like Clemson. I like Clemson big in this game. I actually think that South Carolina basically played their game a couple weeks ago. They realized that, look, at 9-2, that's still a very nice season. I just think that Clemson's a little bit better. And even though the game's in Columbia and even though it's on South Carolina's home turf, I think Clemson wins big. Like you said, Sammy Watkins, Taj Boyd, that combination is unstoppable.
Electric.
And I would like to see something from Clowney to see if he really deserves to be a top 3 pick in the NFL. But I like Clemson to put up a lot of points. I like them to win 42-28.
Ooh.
Yeah, big offensive output.
Goodness gracious. Your boy Ray calling out the crazy score for the game. All right, so look, before we get to the Iron Bowl, we're building up. Here's our last one. Number 21, Johnny Manziz's, or as they call him, Jonathan Pigskin. I kind of like that. That's kind of slick right there. Jonathan Pigskin. I love it, Ray. So A&M's 21 at number 5. We're moving up here. 5, Missouri. This is an interesting one. You know, I've kind of slept on Missouri all season, and I didn't give them the props that I should have, and I could be sending out an I'm sorry to them, and I'm going to send it right now because I think Franklin and Josie and just the defensive line, Washington on the outside, you know, he's been kind of explosive, 9 touchdown receptions. I think Missouri has enough that they can match up with what, you know, Manziel does, passing and running, and then throwing to Mike Evans on the outside, who's really a monster. I think he's going to be a great NFL talent, over 1,300 receiving yards and 12 touchdowns. But I think Missouri has enough defensively that they just make Johnny make a couple of mistakes, and Jonathan Pigskin, in sort of, I guess, a limelight game, right, playing against the number 5 in the nation, does not win the back-to-back Heismans, and they go to 8-4. And I got Missouri winning 31-28 over Texas A&M.
Okay.
Go Mizzou. I think they can do it, Franklin.
So Mizzou,
baby,
is also 10-1, not getting the respect that they deserve. And when Franklin went down, everybody thought their season's over. But Matty Mauk stepped in and played great as a redshirt freshman. And they're at home in Columbia. Having said all of that, I think Johnny Manziel is special, and I think that if you give him basically his last chance to play a college football regular season game, he is going to do some big, big things. Now, he might get in trouble by trying to do too much, and he might end up throwing 2 or 3 interceptions. But I'm going to say that Johnny Manziel is going to put up a game that puts him back in the Heisman Trophy running. Maybe vault him to 1 or 2 in the Heisman Trophy winning, in the Heisman Trophy race. So I'm looking at Johnny Manziel for 400 yards, 4 touchdowns, passing, one touchdown running. So five total touchdowns from Johnny Manziel. Yes. So
Ray
I
feeling
see
generous. I mean, Ray feeling
31-34, Texas A&M goes into Columbia and beats a pretty good Missouri Tiger team. But
very good.
Johnny Manziel, last regular season game, puts up 41 and gets himself right back into the Heisman talk.
Now, Missouri, I think for the SEC title game, it's still between them and South Carolina, correct? Who will play the winner of Alabama-Auburn in the SEC championship.
Yep.
So we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, hey, this is where, you know, I guess, you know, Ray and Tay, we differ for the week. But let's do it. We've built up to the Iron Bowl. It's, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, Auburn. These are some of the greatest rivalries in sports and in college football. And A.J. McCarron, he's had himself a great career, a pretty decent season, and, you know, almost 2,400 yards, 2,399. But you've got Yeldon, you've got Norwood, and you've got Coach Saban in that defense. And I think, like I said on our preview show with Charles Davis way back in August, Ray, I just think Alabama is the type of team that they're built, especially with C.J. Mosley, they're built to last and they're built to win it all. They're going to go into Auburn with that amazing running game. You know, I love Mason. I love their offense, how they, you know, just do their plays. I like Coates. I don't know if that's our boy Ben Coates' nephew
Sammy
over there,
Coates.
The receiver. I like. Do you know?
No, but Trey Mason can run, and then Mason and Marshall. That
well,
combination
is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean,
listen,
Marshall tucks it and runs.
I have respect for them, but I just think Roll Tide, they're going to go handle War Eagle. I have Alabama winning this game. Might get a little defensive, more surprisingly than what people think. I think they win 26-23, Alabama. And McCarron,
so this game,
AJ, will be there at Heisman night. I don't know.
He wins his Heisman?
He
wins his Heisman on
Saturday? I think it should be Winston, but I think if Manziel doesn't do what he needs to do and Boyd and these guys don't do it, McCarron might be holding the trophy. I just think the country is just overwhelmed by the drinking the Bama juice.
Well, it's hard not to. So, remember in our preseason pick, I thought that the SEC would beat up on each other. And I thought that this was the year that the SEC would not have a representative in the national championship game, right? I thought it would be Ohio State and Oregon. Just because the SEC is by far the best conference and they had eight top 25 teams, but I just thought that they would be so close that they'd beat up on each other, including Alabama. And if I were to stick to my guns, I would say this is the season that Auburn would beat them, and then Auburn would lose in the SEC championship game. So that's how my prediction still holds true. Obviously, Oregon's not going to be playing in the national championship game. They have two losses.
That's your low-end theory, but are you going against it? Keep it real.
So now that I've seen a whole regular season – I can't go against Alabama. I mean, this game hasn't meant this much since 2010. Cam Newton, the year that he went in there and took care of business, right? I think he was behind by two touchdowns, and they still won.
They have the last three championships, right? It was Cam Newton, then Bama. So
the winner of this game has gone on to win the national championship exactly the last 3 years, and I think this will be the winner of this game will be the national champion, and I think that winner is Alabama. I can't see the Tide losing this game, even though it's at Jordan-Hare Stadium, and even though, you know, the
Auburn's good too.
Auburn Tigers will be ready. I just think that Alabama's too tough. Fundamentally, their defense is good enough to contain Auburn. This isn't the best Alabama defense they've had, and I think that A.J. McCarron, as a senior, nothing rattles him. T.J. Yeldon, of course, is a stud. And they even have the backup. Kenyon Drake has run for 660 yards and 8 touchdowns.
Right.
I mean,
no, you're right. It's
Norwood and Cooper on the outside, too much. Too much tide.
Too
roll
much.
Tide. So
no,
I agree.
Give me a score.
I agree. I think Alabama wins this game 27-20.
Okay, we're both pretty close on that. So we close the chapter on college football week 14, and you know then we'll start to get in some of the Heisman talk next week, and we go to Sundays. But there were three games on Thursday we got to review. Now I'm a little salty. 22-20, shout out to the birthday boy, Stacey Manley, his Ravens won. Took care of my Steelers. I'll just say this because we got to get to the preview games. And we're, you know, I'll say this. Ravens are very much alive for the playoffs. I don't think my Steelers are done, though. But that was a huge win. They held court at home. And, you know, Joe Flacco, he stepped up. I don't think, you know, the Steelers played bad. Le'Veon Bell was very solid and, you know, did well for the fantasy owners, as well as Torrey Smith did good for people, too. But, hey, the Ravens did what they had to do, right?
Well, I predicted it. I predicted all three home teams would win. And, you know, here's the thing about the Ravens-Steelers. If these teams played each other 100 times, it would be 50-50. I mean,
exactly.
It would be the same, right, and in 5 years it might change. But these teams are so evenly matched that this game could have gone either way. The Ravens made a couple more plays. The Steelers dug themselves a little bit of a hole, and then they couldn't come back in the fourth quarter and – you know, you had the injuries in the last play of the game and then the failed two-point conversion and whatever. But this game, the only problem is that this game meant
Justin
the loser.
Tucker was the man.
yeah. As we both said, the loser of this game is probably on the outside looking in the playoff race just because the AFC has got so many teams that are close to taking that sixth playoff spot that – you know, you got to think if you're a Steeler fan, this was a huge, huge opportunity that you let slip through your fingers. And now Baltimore is in the pole position for that, you know, for that playoff spot. You got to think that Cincinnati's going to win the division. But I don't know.
But they're one game behind Cincinnati. And maybe San Diego beats, and we'll talk about it. Maybe you never know. They could still have a shot at the division. We'll see
so
how
it
goes.
So what are you thinking today as a Steeler fan, for all those Steeler fans out there? Are you thinking about next year already, or are you still having
let's
outside?
Let's move on. I think we still got an outside shot. I think Baltimore still got a has a tough schedule. They could get upset by Adrian Peterson and the Vikings. They could lose to the Lions. They have some other tough games. So I don't think it's over yet. So I'm keeping hope alive because, you know what, we're playing good football. We really are. So, that like you said, that's just one of those games. Now – let's go to your boys, because
how about them Cowboys?
I gotta give them their respect, man. And I, you know, we both, you know, that was the only game I picked wrong, and you had all three homes. Cowboys look great, man. I think it's still going to come down to Cowboys and Eagles, but the Cowboys, they did what they had to do. They took care of the Raiders, and give Matt McGloin out of Penn State, give him some credit. The kid's playing well. This receiver Holmes comes out of nowhere and gets isms for the Raiders. You got to like that. I don't know anybody had them on their fantasy roster, but wow. And, you know, I mean, if you're a Raider fan, you're looking forward to the future because the Raiders are heading in the right direction. I think for the Cowboys, though, the only thing that's really rough is your boy Dunbar, who played a great game, you know, 82 yards. He's got hurt, and he's out for the rest of the season. So,
yeah, that's tough, especially because DeMarco Murray has shown historically that he's injury prone. So if the Cowboys are going to succeed, they need to run the ball. And I think that they can't rely on Tony Romo to put up 350 and Dez Bryant and Jason Witten.
So
to
Randall
deliver.
Will have to step up probably, Randall and Tanner to step up and take those 12 carries that Dunbar had. So we'll see. But your Cowboys look good, man. You know, your Cowboys look good. Now,
I will say this. Two straight weeks, really quickly, as a Cowboy fan, straight weeks, the Cowboys had
7-5.
Excellent second halves. And I thought that this game was set up perfectly for Dallas to lose during the game, right? I said, oh, they're down.
Right.
They're down two touchdowns. They ended up playing methodically and playing great second half football. So kudos to the Cowboys for two straight weeks putting together good second halves and winning those two games.
Yeah, and Romo, man, Dez Bryant, you know, hey, he had a nice game. We got to give Dez Bryant some love because, you know, you can say what you want, but he's right below Megatron and maybe even Marshall, you know, probably the top three receivers in the league. Now, speaking of Megatron, just ridiculous. What, 101 touchdowns, 6 receptions, does his fantasy thing, 40-10. Now, look, Green Bay, you know, maybe they should have benched Flynn. You know, the reality is they need Aaron Rodgers back, and he wasn't ready yet, maybe next week. But it might be too late for them for the playoffs, to be honest with you, for Green Bay, especially with the Niners and Cardinals, you know, winning and looking good and stuff like that. But the Lions, I think the Lions have the talent to play with anybody. But fundamentally, it's the turnovers, Ray. And I don't like Schwartz, and I don't like – sometimes that Matthew Stafford just throws it up for grabs. Even though Megatron will come down with it, sometimes I think he has a little Romo in him where he'll give away the game. Because he'll get you 4 touchdowns maybe, but he also will get you 3 turnovers.
Yeah,
so,
you know,
props to the Lions for winning, but they make you nervous.
You're right, and they had 3 turnovers in the first half, so you could figure they should have won, you know, 60-10 instead of 40-10. But this team is undisciplined, and you can get away with that week to week in the NFL, maybe. But when it comes to the playoffs, you're going to play a team that's as good or better than you, and in their case, is definitely going to be more disciplined than you. And so unless you expect Megatron to go out there 1-on-5 and catch the balls above, you know, a corner and a safety every time, these guys have to get their running game together, get the discipline back. Now, Reggie Bush has been a fantastic pickup for them, and
that
combination of
signing.
Bush and Bell, and you know, I'm my man, Joik Bell, I have him on fantasy, so I got excited last night.
He did good. And Bush, 117 and a touchdown, 20 carries. You got to like Reggie. Reggie Bush saves this team from themselves. That's what he does, and so does Bell. The running game saves them from Stafford's foolishness. That's what I believe.
But you're right, though. Between the undisciplined penalties that they get and the nature of the offensive play calling and the fact that Stafford is a little bit of a Brett Favre / Tony Romo gunslinger, this team can just as easily play themselves out of the playoffs. But you know what? It's their division to have, and I think they're going to take it. I don't know how far they progress in the playoffs, but I think they win that division.
Yeah, I think they have it, too.
It looks like we have a caller. Let's plug in a caller here. I think we might have a caller to talk some NFL. Hello, caller. You're on the air with Ray and Tay.
Hi, guys.
Hey, how are you? What's your name and what's your question?
Zachary. First-time caller, long-time listener. I wanted to change gears quickly with an NFL question. I'm a big Niners fan and Broncos fan. Who out of those teams do you choose to win the Super Bowl? Thanks, and love the show.
Thank you, Zachary. That was a great question. Okay, so.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Huh? Happy Thanksgiving
to you, too. Say a happy holidays. Thank you for calling in. Bye. Okay, so that's a great question. Broncos and Niners, right? Those are his teams. You know, this year, Zachary, I got to be honest with you, with Crabtree coming back this week, you got a lot to be thankful for. So I think Kaepernick is starting to look better. I'm holding on to the Niners because they were my Super Bowl pick. That's all I got left because the Texans are a joke. Ray's got his Broncos still going. But I think it's looking worse for the Broncos with the cold weather and Manning not looking so great in New England. And it's looking better for the Niners. So who knows how it's going to play out because you got to look at the Seahawks and the Saints. But I think, maybe it could be the Broncos and Niners, and you would have a big decision to make, young man, for the Super Bowl, who you're picking for. What do you think, Rick?
Yeah, well, that's my pick, actually. I said that I thought that the Niners would beat the Broncos in the Super Bowl. Now, the Broncos are on track because they look like they're one of the top two teams in the AFC. The problem is the Niners, even though I think their roster is built to win a Super Bowl, I mean, they were there last year, right? So I'm not saying that much by saying their roster is built. I think that the Niners have lost a little bit of their mojo. So between Frank Gore and Colin Kaepernick, they were doing much more on offense last year. So I actually think that the Niners need to prove a couple of things to me. They need to beat Seattle. They need to go on a 3 or 4 game winning streak, because right now I got to say that the Broncos look better in the AFC than the Niners do in the NFC, partially because there are more good teams in the NFC that the Niners would have to go on the road to beat. So even though I picked the Niners in the beginning of the season, I say the Broncos look a little better right now.
Okay, yeah, but don't forget now, Vernon Davis, Bolden, and then you throw back in Crabtree.
Right.
And that makes a big difference, because Crabtree, you know, he's not breakaway speed per se, but he's another guy that opens it up for Davis and then Bolden. You know, the Bolden becomes your number two now, and Davis your number three, with Crabtree being your number one. So you got to like that. So
Absolutely.
Let's move on to the – yeah, now that's a great caller and great question. So let's move on to Elijah's team, my oldest son, those Cardinals, Ray. They are a playoff team this year. I mean, and playing amazing. I'm actually banking on Carson Palmer over Nick Foles for the fantasy, to make it into the playoffs. So I got to ask you. I mean, I actually think Arizona, their defense travels to Philadelphia. They don't play great at home, and I think Nick Foles, not that he's due for a bad game, but I just think this secondary and Patrick Peterson and the athletes that the Cardinals have on defense, I think the Cardinals sort of just outduel the Eagles in Philadelphia. And I think the Cardinals win 30-27. I think it's going to be a fun, high-scoring game. And Larry Fitzgerald
really
puts up 102 touchdowns for Ray in fantasy.
So I've been a little bit off on the Cardinals all year, and I underestimated them. I thought that Carson Palmer would put up big numbers, but I thought he would do it in garbage time. So I have to write my apology letter right now to the Cardinals, because they're 7-4, and a couple of games, if they win a couple of games, they'll be in the playoffs. I think 9-7, definitely 10-6 gets you into the playoffs in the NFC. However, I think the Eagles have a little something for them. The Cowboys won. So the Cowboys are now 7-5. So if the Eagles want to keep pace with the Cowboys, now they're down a game because they lost a head-to-head a few weeks ago. They play them in week 17.
Right.
But I think the Eagles at home put up 35. I like the Eagles.
Wow.
And I'm not sure the Cardinals can do that. Even the Cardinals have a great D. I like the Eagles. I like Nick Foles. I think he's on a roll. I think Shady McCoy, Jackson, I think they matriculate the ball down the field. So I like the Eagles right now, and I think they can put up points. I think the Cardinals can't match them. So then the Cardinals put up 28, and the Eagles win 35-28. Both teams go to 7-5 in the hunt in the NFC.
Should be interesting. We have to skip over. I got to tell you, the two lowest-ranked defenses in the NFL are the Houston Texans, who host the Patriots. You know, if you looked at the schedule when the season started, you'd be like, oh, that'd be a great game. Well, probably won't be. And then the Atlanta Falcons going to Buffalo, because both Falcons and Texans, horrible, horrible this season. So let's look at the St. Louis Rams, a really solid NFC West matchup against the Niners. And I got to ask you, you know, can we just say now that the NFC West is the best division in football?
Yes.
I'm going to say yes, they are, and I'm going to say Zach Stacy and the Rams put up one heck of a fight, but lose 23-20 to the Niners.
I think the Niners, as Zachary, our young caller, and we love young callers, because that means they're
into
sport from a young age. We love it. We love it.
Yeah.
So as he asked about the Niners, I think the Niners turn it up. I think getting Crabtree, Manningham, Davis back off of the concussion, Kaepernick, in his second full year of starting, I think they start to hit their stride. They're only 3-2 at home, but I think they run the table at home, go to 6-2. I like this Niner team. I like the way they're built. I think they're built for the playoffs. And the Rams, even though they play the Niners and the Seahawks extremely well, I think they've come up short this week. I think ultimately against a team as good as the
Not
Rams.
Not enough offense.
Yeah, Kelly Clemens to, you know, Tavon Austin and Zach Stacy. They're good, but they're not that good. I like the Niners to take care of business at home, 24-17.
All right, we got Denver at KC. This is the, you know, this is the game we've been waiting for. We said in this 3-week run for Denver it would be rough, and they lost the Patriot game. Well, I don't think they're going to be able to, KC, be able to beat Denver, and they'll go into against them. I thought KC looked good enough in that first matchup, 27-17, that they could take them out. But not having Houston and Justin Houston
and Tom Bailey,
it's too much. And I just think that the Broncos, they're upset. They didn't like that loss to New England. You know, the sheriff, he's going to light it up. I think Manning has about 348 passing yards, you know, 3 touchdowns. I do think it'll be an issue if they don't have Julius Thomas again. So we'll have to watch out to see if he's going to be active. Probably will be back. He's probable. But I'll go Broncos. I actually think they'll put up some points. I think not 27. I think they go for 34 and the Chiefs 23.
So remember when the Broncos had the 3-game stretch? I said they'd beat the Chiefs, and in the middle they'd lose to the Patriots. So I still hold to my guns on that. I think they'll beat Kansas City. I didn't see anything in the Kansas City game in Denver to lead me to believe that Kansas City should beat Denver, especially 2 weeks later, and especially with the banged-up Houston and Ali. I think there's going to be too much pressure on Jamal Charles to carry the load offensively, even though the Broncos D hasn't been great. I don't know that Alex Smith can exploit it. His receivers are just okay. You know, Dwayne Bowe we thought was a rising star, but his play has plateaued. So I like Denver. I think Denver puts up points anywhere. Even in Kansas City, they were held to, 24 when last time they played, but I think this time they put up 30.
27.
I think they put up 34, and I don't think the Chiefs can match that. So I think the Broncos win something like 34-24 and take that home field advantage, number one seed in the AFC. They take it back. It goes right into their, you know, it's theirs to lose now.
So before we go to Cincinnati, San Diego, real quick update from the Garden in the NIT Championship, 65-59, Arizona up on the Dukies. So Coach Sean Miller, who we know from when Ray and I were in school, he was the point guard for Pitt. So
yes.
Our boy Sean Miller. And, you know, we'll see, you know, college hoops is exciting, man. It's just getting me going. But so let's talk about
these
Bengals.
We've got 2 more games to preview. So let me feed this one to you. Let me tell you something.
All right.
Cincinnati, my team
Oof.
That I thought would win the AFC North against a resurgent San Diego team with Phillip Rivers. What does Phillip Rivers have to do to beat Cincinnati and keep the Chargers alive for the AFC number 6 seed?
No turnovers. Get rid of the ball quick to Woodhead and Gates. His multitude of receivers, Royal and Keenan Allen, potential backup, you know, potential rookie of the year, maybe even over Lacy. And I think actually this is my upset pick. I think the Chargers win.
Okay.
I think they're 2-2 at home, and they're, you know, 5-6. I think they go to 6-6. And sort of keep pace and keep alive with the Ravens for the playoffs. And then it gets interesting in the AFC North because the Bengals are only going to be 1 game up with them having 1 game remaining with the Ravens. But I'll go Chargers 28-24.
Okay.
Rivers 320 and 2 touchdowns.
I'll take the other side of that. I like the Cincinnati Bengals. I've liked them all year. I think that this is their time to pull away. If they win this game, they go to 8-4, puts them a few games ahead of the Ravens, and almost cements the AFC North for them. If they lose this game, on the other hand, they go to 7-5. So even though the Chargers have been playing well, the Chargers are only 2-2 at home. I don't think they have a huge home field advantage in San Diego. You know, the weather's so good in Cali, people don't come out, and they're not crazy fanatics like they are, you know, the Northeast and the Midwest. So I like AJ Green and Lewis. And the other I like that offense that the Bengals have. They're a little banged up on D. They've never really recovered, from some of the injuries on the defensive line. So they're not as stellar as they used to be, heading into the season. But I like them. I like Andy Dalton to lead them 4 touchdowns. I think they win 31-28.
You like the Red Bomber. All right, last game, Sunday Night Football, NFC East. It's always a fun battle. Giants against the Redskins. This is the problem here, though.
The Redskins, game doesn't count for anything.
It doesn't. Well, the winner still can sniff something, I mean, you never know. You never know how the last couple of weeks are going to play out of the season. But it looks like it's over. I'll say RG3 gets it together. The Giants drop down again. I think the Redskins have been starting to get sniff it close. And Alfred Morris might be too much for the Giants. So I think, actually, I want the Giants to win. But I'll say the Redskins win a close one, 27-24 Redskins.
Yeah, for all you fans in D.C., next year is your year. You got to figure out what to do with Mike Shanahan.
My boy Sean Savoy. Yeah.
But I agree with Tay. I like the Redskins in this game, but just barely. I think ultimately it comes down to the Redskins are able to run the ball consistently, and I think that Morris and Helu will allow Griffin to find some open receivers, take some pressure off of them, and then Garcon and Hankerson and Reed and all these guys. I like the Redskins just a little bit more than the Giants in this game. I think the Redskins win a close one, 27-26.
27-26. Great show, and I will say this, thank you for our caller from Young Zachary and then Young William introing us. Young William is number one.
It's a youth movement. We're getting young.
Yo, you got to love it. Ray and Tay are down with the youth, man. You got to love it. But I'll say this, Young William is in first place in the Pigskin Pick'em. Last week led everybody with 7 correct and a bad week for everyone. And the week before, 13 out of 14 games jumped up past the 12-year-old Adam, my friend John Marchese's son, Adam Marchese, who also listens to the show sometimes. So these young kids are dominating, Ray, Tay, Hank, a bunch of other grown men. So we got to shout out a 4-year-old in first place and a 12-year-old in second place. Man, that's the way you got to do it. The youngsters of America, the future, Ray.
Ray and Tay love the youngsters. So thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Have a great
weekend. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Eat all those leftovers. Make your mama proud. And then we'll talk to you on Monday. Ray and Tay.
Definitely. Talking sports with
friends. With friends. We're out.
Peace. Have a good one. Everybody enjoy your Thanksgiving and happy Hanukkah and hold your family tight.
Mira mami, ven acá aquí. Come over here and dance with me.
On,
I see your body look so heavenly.
Yeah.
Baby girl, you're delicious to me.
Pala
papa ball, part of me. I'm the type that's right and my game is tight. And I see baby girl, you looking alright.